Flickering lights, dark hallways, atmospheric synth music, hairspray, and Eggo waffles. All these things come to mind when we hear the word Stranger Things, as we bide our time in between the releases of Volumes 1 and 2 of the Duffer Brothers' nostalgia-fueled sci-fi horror series. We've decided to take a look back at its humble beginnings. So grab your bike and follow us as we take a trip to Hawkins, Indiana, to talk about one of Netflix's biggest hits, Stranger Things, on this episode of Script or Screen.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to another wonderful edition of Script or Screen, your number one source for secret government science conspiracies. I am one of your co-hosts, Christopher Kitchen, alongside my other most notorious scientific evildoers of co-hosts, Zach Strachman. Zach, how are you?
Hold on, let me roll this 1d20 to see how I'm doing. 12. I'm doing better than I am doing worse.
I don't know, because you had to get more than like a 14.
Assign me like a charisma stat.
Plus 2 charisma.
Okay, you know what? 12, not bad.
All right.
I don't know. Someone who plays D&D is going to be like, actually.
What's your D&D class, my friend?
Wood elf, dog.
Wood elf? My D&D class is, I don't have one, because I've never seriously played D&D once. I think
We tried to get all of our friends into like a group, and I think we got as far as being like, yes, we all want to do it.
Right.
And then it was the coming together and actually doing it that proved a little difficult.
Yeah, I think the closest I'll ever get to D&D is like, you know, Skyrim.
Yeah, that's, something like that.
And I'm cool with that. I'm comfortable with that.
Yeah. You know,
that's awesome. There's a whole visual element.
Here's the thing. If someone I knew was like, "Hey, you want to join my D&D campaign?" I'd be like, "Oh, yes."
I mean, would you commit to that like every week and you do that kind of thing?
That's the problem, is it is a commitment.
I find it so hard to put together a poker night, buddy.
Like, it's funny, because then I've thought about, like, would I want to be a person playing the game, or would I want to be, like, the dungeon master who, like, tells the story? Because you know me, I love telling stories. I love writing. So it's like, would I want to be the person who's, like, guiding everyone along? But I also, like, I would love to, like, be able to craft a cool story for everybody, but I also want to be involved with it. I want to be, like, along for the ride.
Yeah, but then you know what's going to happen. Maybe your character could be a seer, and they could just see everything as it happens because they know it's going to happen.
Unfortunately, I think it's one of those games where you can't have your cake and eat it, too. So
says who? It's a game where you can do anything you want. Actually, you know what interpretation of D&D I've always enjoyed was the one in Freaks and Geeks.
Okay.
Where he kind of just got to come in and... what was he again?
You know how long it's been since I've watched Freaks and Geeks?
Well, you know what's funny? I've never actually seen it. I've only ever seen this clip.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Welcome back to Script to Screen. We are your hosts, Chris and Zach.
That's
here
us
again to talk about movies and TV and all the wonderful things that entertainment has to provide for us. You could find us on our website, www.scriptorscreen.com or anchor.fm/scriptorscreen. There, all of our past, present, and future episodes will be available for your listening pleasure. Find us on social media at scriptorscreen, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube. We are here.
We are everywhere.
We are, well, we try to be.
Chris, I gotta ask you a very important question, and it's a question that not only I, but a lot of our lovely listeners may judge you for. What is your go-to nostalgic 80s hit?
Are you joking?
No.
It's Star Wars.
No, I meant music.
Oh! I guess Star Wars lives kind of in the past, too, like, you know, in the 70s, but, like, you know, I guess Return of the Jedi was 80s.
Yeah, I mean, I'm talking, like, music, though.
Music?
Like, what's your 80s pop, like, nostalgic, perfect song?
80s pop?
This 80s song. What's your favorite 80s song? If I had a gun to your head and I said 80s, pick one 80s song that's just like your favorite to listen to.
I might get murdered that situation. I don't know that I have one. Not that I don't. Like, I like, what is that? I've always liked Separate Ways by Journey, right?
Okay. That's not a terrible song.
But it's only because I feel like I've heard it in, like, scenarios where I'm like, oh, yeah, this is the 80s, you know?
That's okay. I mean, I was going to say Walk Like an Egyptian by the Bengals.
I'm not a fan of Walk Like an Egyptian.
Oh, my God.
I'm really not a fan. And it started way back when I heard it in, like, JoJo. I mean, I've heard the song before, but, like,
remember when you heard it from JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
I would listen to it at the end credits. I'm like, I don't know that I like this very much.
Oh, man, everyone's, like, coming out of the woodwork. You know, I liked Running Up the Hill before it was on Stranger Things, and now it's like, oh, really? You never mentioned it before?
Yeah.
It was on Stranger Things. I don't know, but whatever.
I would, a second piece of information, Huey Lewis in the News.
Oh.
Any of the songs that they did for Back to the Future.
Ooh, Power of Love.
Power of Love, like...
Hell yeah.
I'm a fan of
those. Huey Lewis in the News slaps. I would also like to posit one, Hall and Oates, You Make My Dreams Come True.
There you go.
That's some good shit right there. We're talking 80s nostalgia. We're talking catchy music today on Script or Screen, because we're talking about Stranger Things. But before we get into that, I want to share a little bit of entertainment world news that I saw today.
Boop, 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 boop. Here's Script or Screen's entertainment world news.
So we're recording this June 13th, and as of today, I believe, or as of last night, Jennifer Hudson has joined a very... Am I just totally botching her name? You gave me a weird look.
No, I just didn't expect this news. I haven't heard about this, so...
She has joined a very exclusive group of people who have EGOTed.
Oh!
She received her Tony last night, I think, and that cleared her. She's got one of each.
Yo, she got.
She got EGOT.
She got EGOTed.
So
that's awesome.
Props to her. What a legend.
Dude, that's pretty sick.
That's all for today on entertainment news. I saw it on the news earlier and I'm like, oh, that's pretty freaking cool.
Oh, actually I have a really cool piece of like technology news.
Ooh, hit 'em.
This is the thing that I don't know how long this has been out and available, but I only just discovered it today. Zach, as you know, I'm a streaming aficionado.
Mm-hmm.
I try to pay attention to all the platforms and where they're headed and where they're going, what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
For many years, HBO series of streaming platforms, whether it was Now or
Go.
HBO Go, now we have HBO Max,
mm-hmm.
they have not been available on many television native streaming apps. They had an exclusive agreement with Samsung to be only on their televisions, which was unfortunate for the rest of the world.
That's weird.
But then there were some bypasses, like, oh, if you had like a Google TV adapter or whatever, it was available on Google platforms, kind of like the Sony TVs that you have.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know when this happened, but very recently I saw the HBO Max app finally available on LG televisions.
Oh, wow.
And I just downloaded it, so now I don't have to go really through my weird PlayStation.
Could you imagine if Netflix was like, hey, Netflix, we're only available on Vizios?
Dude, that would suck. That would literally be the worst.
Yeah, so thank God streaming is available everywhere and anywhere. Yeah. And there's too many...
I was considering buying a Sony TV just so I didn't have to go through my PlayStation all the time.
let me tell you, I have my Sony Bravia, and everything is so simple and easy and fast. And this is not an ad, but Sony, if you're listening, hit us up. Let's talk about particularly one streaming service, Netflix. Netflix is kind of in a weird bubble in the public eye right now, because on one hand, they keep jacking their prices up, and they see this like exponential drop in their viewer base, and then they blame it on other things. So I don't know if you saw, but recently they cut basically a bunch of animation studios and canceled a bunch of animation series because they deemed that as the reason they were losing money, and not like, hey, you guys keep raising the price of your streaming service and people don't want to pay it. And so, yeah, but at the same time, they make really good shows sometimes, and they take on some very ambitious projects. Namely, Stranger Things is one of them. I think they said for this season and for season 5, each episode is running them $30 million.
Oh my god.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
I was gonna say, though, like, we've done the math before. I'm not sure where their subscriber base is now, because I think they lost a certain amount of subscribers recently.
Metric shit ton.
You know, are they really strapped for cash?
No, they're not.
I doubt it. How much of it, like, messed with their profits, you know, so that they have to show their shareholders? Probably a fair amount. But at the same time, like, they make so much money in a singular month based on, like, how many subscribers they already do have. Like, what does it matter?
Yeah, and I mean, like, you know, they just had their Netflix Geeked Week, where, like, they unveiled, like, tons of new projects. Sandman's coming out. Umbrella Academy. Just tons and tons and tons of shows. And it's like, there's no end to them in sight. And, you know, like, they're coming out with, like, the One Piece live action. And they did just, like, a teaser for that, where it just shows that they're spending the money to build these, like, massive, huge practical sets for it. And I'm like, the show better be good, or they spent a lot of money for one season of television.
Oh wow.
But you know, it's pretty crazy. And then here we are back with Stranger Things. Listen, for season 4 of Stranger Things, if they were really spending $30 million an episode, I saw some egregious green screen in a few scenes of season 4. So
I would say that I'm, for the most part, happy with what I've seen from season 4. I think is definitely a step above the previous season, which I have voiced many times, at least privately, that I'm not as big of a fan of the third season. But season 4, I'm liking so far. Now, if we want to talk in reference to season 1, I think major improvements have been made.
Let's dig into season 1, then, and let's really talk about it, talk about what is there. And then we can kind of look at it in terms of where they've gone since that initial season, and, like, kind of talk about, like, the impact of this show, because it really, this was a big one for Netflix.
Oh, for sure.
So I guess to start us off, Chris, why don't you give the folks at home, oh, by the way, full spoilers for season 1 of Stranger Things. I can't imagine there's many people out there who haven't seen it, and I feel like if you haven't seen Stranger Things, you've either been in a coma, or you're one of those, like, contrarians who they refuse to watch something because it's popular, even though it's good. So get off your ass, watch Stranger Things, and then come back and listen. So we're talking full spoilers. Chris, do you have a synopsis that actually is, like, what the story is about?
I think so.
Okay, because some of these synopses are definitely hit or miss.
So let's go with this one. This one has not come from Rotten Tomatoes. It does come to us from, I'll tell you right now, who? What the hell is this? Bustled, or Bustle. In an online American women's magazine founded in 2013.
Wow.
But I'm reading it from Wikipedia, of course. All right, here we go. The season begins in November 1983, when researchers at Hawkins National Laboratory open a rift to the Upside Down, an alternate dimension that reflects onto the real world. A monstrous humanoid creature escapes and abducts a boy named Will Byers and a teenage girl named Barbara Holland. Will's mother, Joyce, and the town's police chief, Jim Hopper, search for Will. At the same time, a young psychokinetic girl who goes by the name Eleven escapes from the laboratory and assists Will's friends, Mike, Dustin, and Lucas, in their own efforts to find Will.
Hmm, not too bad.
No.
So, honestly,
kind of vague.
So, like, in the... Well, it's funny, you think it's vague. I almost think it says too much. But, there's a sweet spot in synopsis writing. I feel like it's an art.
I feel like the fact they mentioned Barbara in this,
and,
the synopsis
and
was
the
like...
Monster, well, I mean, I guess you know about the monster and stuff, but, like, you know, you want enough information just to tickle their balls and then, like... And then have them wanting more.
I know.
It's all about
nothing
the
ever went
tickling.
Wrong with a good ball tickle.
Exactly. That's what someone said. Stranger Things Season 1 came out. It was released July 15th, 2016. 8 episodes long. Created by Matt and Ross Duffer, credited as the Duffer Brothers. Directed by the Duffer Brothers and Sean Levy of current Adam Project and soon-to-be Deadpool 3 fame.
Ooh.
He did Free Guy, too. It is written by the Duffer Brothers, Jessica Mecklenburg, Justin Doble, Allison Tatlock, Jesse Nixon-Lopez, and Paul Dichter. Music by Michael Stein and Kyle Dixon of the band Survive. Obviously streamed on Netflix. And we got us Grade A cast, really good cast. We have Winona Ryder as Joyce Byers, David Harbour as Jim Hopper, Finn Wolfhard as Mike Wheeler, Millie Bobby Brown as Eleven. So I don't know how to pronounce this kid's name. His real name is Gaetano, but Gatton Matarazzo as Dustin Henderson, Caleb McLaughlin.
I thought it was Gaten.
Is it Gaten? I don't know. He's Dustin. That's how I know him. Caleb McLaughlin as Lucas Sinclair. Natalia Dyer as Nancy Wheeler. Charlie Heaton as Jonathan Byers. Joe Keery as Steve Harrington. Noah Schnapp as Will Byers. Matthew Modine as Dr. Martin Brenner, a.k.a. Papa. And Rob Morgan as Officer Powell. It's a good cast.
I feel like the only people that actors that were known here to anybody, obviously Winona Ryder.
Yeah, of course.
Matthew Modine. Perhaps David Harbour. Really, at this time, I feel like was still kind of like a B actor. Like you just seen him in a bunch of roles.
Right.
I think the same year Suicide Squad came out, which he had like kind of played a little bit of a character in that film.
He was in like 2 or 3 scenes in the movie, yeah.
Yeah, and he had been like smaller things, but he never had like a real like kind of almost leading role, even though I think this cast is considered ensemble, like everyone's leading in their own right.
And then obviously Matthew Modine was a pretty established actor as well. And for a lot of this cast, this was kind of their jumping off point to really go in a lot of places. Rob Morgan, he had been in a lot of stuff before this. Namely, he had been playing Turk in the Netflix Marvel shows, which is kind of like, I want to say it's the first place I really noticed him as a recurring actor. And ever since then, he has just been getting better and better roles. He has taken on a much bigger role in this show. As the seasons have gone by, he went on to play, obviously, we mentioned him in our coverage of Don't Look Up.
Yeah.
And also, he played Magic Johnson, Irving Johnson Sr., Magic Johnson's dad, in Winning Time.
Winning Time.
So it was pretty good.
Needless to say, all these children in the show ended up going to very interesting places after the critical success
of
filming.
Obviously, Finn Wolfhard, he was in, like, It, which very much trying to mine the same vein as Stranger Things with like 80s nostalgia.
Yeah.
Millie Bobby Brown, she...
She probably blew up as the biggest star, like, from this series.
Yeah, last thing I saw her in was, like, in, like, the Godzilla movies.
Godzilla, she was Enola Holmes.
That's right.
Other Netflix-produced projects. Natalia Dwyer, or Dyer, excuse me, she actually starred in a couple of, like, one a short and then, like, a... Kind of a
wasn't the short like about her like being like a child, like a church child or like a religious child and
discovering gets, like pornography like, and stuff,
sexting on the internet. It's uncomfortable.
It was then later like adapted to like a feature film, which like kind of made its way through like the festival circuit. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Charlie Heaton has been character of controversy, if you will,
a little bit
in the news.
I remember after the first season, he got like busted for like having like some coke on him or something. But he was also in New Mutants.
Oh yeah, he was. I forgot about that, dude. That's so funny. Oh my god! And then we also forgot to mention, you know, Joe Carey was the face for Domino's for a little bit. Remember those commercials
where
he did the. They were, like, side-by-sides of, what's that, Ferris Bueller's Day Off?
And, oh, okay, yeah, yes, maybe. That was him? Wow.
That was him. And then, like, there was just this obsession about him, and he kind of looked similar to, who's the new voice of Sonic now?
Ben Schwartz.
Ben Schwartz, they did, like, a whole kind little of. Gimmicky thing together. They don't look alike, they just, no, like,
I can,
people
I can
thought
see
they
it.
Were the very similar.
I could see it. Let's talk about this show, though. Let's dig into it. So, as far as, like, the story, the writing for the show, what I love is the the show's bread and butter is, like, this really perfect blend of slice of life, suburban life, sci-fi intrigue, and then, like, this very realistic missing child drama.
Yeah.
And they do this really creative, it's a smart thing they do with the story and the characters where they don't let any one thing overstay its welcome. So they bounce from, you know, one scene we're dealing with Nancy at high school and her boy troubles, and then we're thrown to like a horror scene of the Demogorgon stalking somebody, and then cutting to Hopper chasing a lead for Will. And then going to the boys, trying to find Will on their own. And so it never feels like there's like a down moment of the show. Everything's always in motion. And the whole town feels alive.
Yeah. I was actually really impressed with how like it didn't, nothing seemed too dull, funny enough, in this small town in the Midwest, like in Indiana, which is actually filmed in, Georgia. I think
yes.
It was, not Decatur. What was the name of the town they shot in? I'm forgetting. But it was kind of nice to see it look. I mean, Georgia in and of its own right does look Midwest as is once you start getting like right outside of Atlanta. But like the school had its nice little identity. Every like house or section, you know, we had like Castle Byers. You had the basement. Even all like the families. Like, while they still represented, like, the nuclear family to a certain degree, it was just kind of nice to see everything blend together in a very interesting way. Almost down to the point where it's just, like, it was weird that you're watching the show and... Or it's not weird. Excuse me. I'm saying the wrong thing.
That's okay.
It's more like... You know, when we come off of things like Spielberg and we're watching like E.T. or we're watching, you know, even the remake of E.T., Super 8,
right.
Or just any of these other like late 70s, early 80s based like programmings, it's I almost feel like we're back home again. I feel like I'm just I'm watching like classic Americana movies.
Oh, for sure. Know? And it's funny, you know, you say that because in my notes for like, you know, when I was taking notes about like kind of like the production of the season as a whole, one of the things I really felt is like the town of Hawkins is so well captured. we don't see half of the town.
Yeah.
But I feel like I could navigate that town if I was there.
I'd be like, okay,
we know enough from just like the dialogue that Lucas lives next door to Mike. And you have
Dustin is like the next closest one.
Yeah, and then Will is like the furthest out. He's kind of out in the woods. And he lives about a mile from Steve Harrington's house and also a mile from Hawkins' lab.
Yeah.
And then, you know, in town there's like the police station and town hall and the movie theater and all these locations that they kind of single out as almost being like within walking distance of each other.
Yeah.
And it's cool. It's like for there are shows that have been on for like Simpsons has been on for 30 years, and I couldn't tell you where anything in Springfield is. And I'm sure here come the Simpsons fanatics. So actually the nuclear plant's over there and Moe's bar's over there and whatever.
It did a good job of kind of like letting you know its identity of and like all the locations. Within kind of such a short period of time, like, you know, back in this period, these episodes were a little less than an hour. Or I feel like if I go right here to, like, the episode listing, Chapter 1, The Vanishing of Will Byers, is only... Where is it at? Will it tell me right here? Oh, no, I probably have to go actually on Netflix to see. Ah, I'm not going to do that. That's too much.
But
I mean, now we're more accustomed to like these almost hour and a half long episodes. Hour 15.
I'm still like preparing myself for the season 4 finale, which is supposed to be like 2 hours and 20 minutes. Just make 10 episodes, Duffer Brothers. What the fuck?
Yeah, that would be really nice.
What was I going to say? But I mean, for 8 episodes, for me to step away after 8 episodes and be like, I feel like I know that town in and out. Is awesome, and there's still enough about it that like when they add stuff in the following seasons, it never feels like, hey, that wasn't there last season.
Yeah,
it's just another kind of like extension of the town. There's a big set that they have a good location in season 4. It's a trailer park, and it never feels like they just shoehorned that in as part of, as a new part of town. I'm like, yeah, it makes sense. This seems like a town that would have a trailer town in it.
Yeah.
Trailer park, excuse me.
Now, if we want to go back and kind of like identify some of the more specific areas per the story, because I think the story progresses and opens in a very interesting way,
mm-hmm.
right? Like our first episode of like in the pilot, we have the kind of the scare at Hawkins' lab.
Oh, I love it. Know? I love the whole first episode is so tense.
How did you feel about it?
So, I love monsters and monster movie monsters. I say it here, the Demogorgon, fantastic movie monster. It could stand shoulder to shoulder with the Xenomorph or the Predator in terms of just a freaky monster and... That opening of the scientist and the running through the halls and like slamming the button in the elevator only to realize the things above him. Classic, you know, 80s movie monster magic.
Do you like our off-screen kill?
I love it. It harkens back to Jaws. It harkens back to like Predator. It's less is more. I am more terrified by the monster I don't see than if they just out and out showed the Demogorgon right away.
I was going to say, they don't actually show the Demogorgon for... Like, actually, I mean, the Demogorgon has, like, two
he shows
scenes
up,
in this one?
He, I say this he, episode? It. I misgendered the Demogorgon.
Oh, don't do that.
I think the first real, like, look of it is... in episode 3, when it starts off with Barb being pulled into the Upside Down, and she's in the pool and she turns and you see the Demogorgon for the first time kind of just turn and look at her and you're like, oh shit.
Yeah. Okay, so that makes sense.
Before that, we just get like a skinny, tall, slender man shadow figure.
That is true.
Let me tell you, that in episode 1, that scene of Will running home... And just, I've seen this first season before, obviously, back when it came out. and I probably rewatched it, you know, when season two came out. But watching it again now, in that that scene when Will is at home alone and just knowing, like, he's just this little boy and that monster's out there, I'm like, this is fucking terrifying.
Yeah, and it's kind of scary to think, like, how he can survive for, like, I don't know, what seemed like a week. That kind of sucked ass. Also, not to mention, that's kind of where you get into, like, some plot holes, I feel like, of the story, or, like, oh, the air's contaminated, but then maybe it's not, but I don't need to dwell on that right now, because it's less than, it doesn't become a little more evident until, I would say, the end of the season.
So, I will say this, before we go any further, a lot of the inconsistencies I feel with this season as it pertains to later seasons can be explained away, because the original intention, and you kind of get it with the vibe, with the title of the show, Stranger Things, is the original intention it was going to be an anthology series. So each season was going to be its own mystery and its own science fiction horror thing. So when they say, yeah, the air's toxic and stuff, maybe the original intention was they were never going to return to this story. And then I think people fell in love with it so much that they're like, no, we're going to stick with this.
You know what's funny is that I thought that each episode was supposed to be an anthology thing before I even started the show. This was like what I thought back in 2016 when it first came out, because I don't think I watched it for at least 2 weeks when it came out. I let everybody kind of get big and really like hype everything up and let all the memes come out. I'm trying to remember some of the good memes from its inception, but I forget.
I mean, to this day, anytime I see a blinking light, I'm like, it's Will.
Oh, God. So speaking of Will, the introduction to our four heroes, let's call them, or three, and you know, our damsel in distress.
Right.
This is a really interesting way to kind of follow up from that scary scene where we kind of go into the idea that, oh, they have this D&D campaign going.
Right.
And everybody has a role, and you kind of get a lot of nice little hints of things that are going to happen.
It's pretty good.
It's just kind of nice seeing all this, like, I don't want to call it symbolism.
It's almost like in Edgar Wright's films where he'll have, like, someone saying something at the beginning of the movie that tells you the entire trajectory of the movie, like in Shaun of the Dead or The World's End.
Yeah.
And here it's kind of like you get the boys all fighting the Demogorgon, and Will hesitates to make a move, and he ultimately gets taken away.
He did make a move to roll for the fireball, but he didn't win. He says in the end, like, the Demogorgon got me.
Boom. And then it's all very purposeful. And I will say, so this is not one of my takes on it. This is something that's, like, I think a lot of people have talked about, but there's some genius things this show does with its characters that allow for, you know, okay, so the kids are huge D&D nerds and just pop culture nerds. They love comic books, they love movies, they love Star Wars and stuff.
Yeah.
And when things start happening and, you know, science fiction-y things and other parallel dimensions and stuff, and all that stuff starts happening, because they're young and they're so immersed in these things, they're able to draw comparisons to their D&D campaign or to things they've seen in movies or in TV or something. And it allows them to make sense of things a lot easier than the adults. And, like, you know, with Hopper, it takes him a large chunk of the season just to kind of accept that there's something screwy going on and things are not as they seem. And for a lot of the older characters, they firmly do not believe that something supernatural could be happening until they are faced with the evidence right in front of them. But with all the boys, they, you know, they see a monster and they go, Demogorgon. They see L flipping the board upside down, and they say, the upside down. Okay, the concept is totally, like, They go into their book and they're like, the Veil of Shadows. And to them, that's all they need. They know how it works now. Okay, there's a separate dimension, and we don't need to be explained the situation any further because we have the tools to make sense of it all, as opposed to the adults who they think that the world has rules that it should be governed by, and it doesn't. And
this is kind of an interesting point because, like, then the boys also have, like, a kind of link to the adult realm of, like, how the real world works in mm-hmm. their teacher.
Yes.
And I love that kind of relationship, especially when it comes to, like, Dustin asks, you know, being
oh my
very
God.
Inquisitive and asking all of his questions.
You're
like,
talking about Dustin?
How do we build a sensory deprivation tank?
You're talking about when, like, he cock blocks him when he's trying to, like, get a, you know, has a date over to watch The Thing?
Right. It's like, oh, it's all melted chewing gum and, like,
why are
everything.
You showing The Thing, Mr. Clark? Like, amazing movie. One of my favorites. But, like, that's not a movie
Zach, what are you talking about? The ladies. Everybody loves a scary movie. They want to snuggle up. They're like, ooh.
That movie gave me nightmares.
Did it?
Oh, my God. When I first saw The Thing,
I don't know that I've ever watched it in full.
We will cover it on this program.
I always felt like if they were to remake it and not cast his son, Kurt Russell's son,
they made a prequel in 2011
with Wyatt Russell.
I don't think so.
See, that's the thing. They need it because right now is the prime time to use him to play his dad, or not necessarily play his dad, but, like, you know, make a sequel and have
the prequel has Joel Edgerton and Tormund Giantsbane in it.
Oh, see, that's. Joel Edgerton, I'm too distracted with seeing him in Star Wars.
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, yeah, so it's a really cool thing that's, like, because, you know, they, even when it comes to, like, Eleven and her powers, they don't question it. They're like, oh, she's a superhero. She's a superhero. She's got the Force. She's an X-Men. You know, we read comics. We see movies. We can make those parallels, and it allows us to understand things and therefore move on to, by the time everyone comes together at the end of the season, the boys and, like, Eleven have figured almost everything out already. And Joyce, who is also kind of less detached from reality, or I say more detached from reality than a lot of the people.
I just think as, like, a mother, she has the willingness to, or not the willingness, but, like, she kind of has, because she has the ability to want to find her son in that way, like, mm-hmm. there's, like, that feeling inside of her that, like, and that she shares that connection with Will, being his mom, she's more willing to accept that something more supernatural is going on.
Yeah, of course.
Than what we've seen. I just feel like that comes with the with motherhood or something like that. Like, that relationship to her is, like, very strong. And also, when we get, like, these really nice flashbacks between scenes of, like, her and Will talking.
Oh, my God.
And she's always, like, being inquisitive, like, about his drawings and just him personally, because he doesn't really have, like, a strong father figure. Like, he has his brother.
Yeah,
right?
And
he has Jonathan.
His deadbeat dad.
That's the thing. It's like, so she is kind of filling in the space that, like, she knows she needs to be twice as strong for him than...
And can I just say,
you know,
Winona Ryder is amazing in this first season. She's good in the other seasons 2 to 4, but I don't think she ever hits as fantastic acting as she does in this first season.
Yeah, no, this is her time to shine. I actually feel like there were maybe 3 or 4 specific characters that really played a very large role, more so than any other character in this season.
Absolutely.
Those being David Arbor, yep. Obviously, as, like, Hopper. Finn Wolfhard, of all the boys, he was the one that was kind of given the most material.
I kind of drew a comparison. He's our, like, the main kid. He's the...
Yeah.
He is the Mikey from Goonies, which is funny because his name in the show is Mike. And Sean Astin, who played Mikey in the Goonies, shows up in season 2. So it's like, ha-ha-ha.
There you go. Obviously, Millie Bobby Brown is 11.
Of course.
And then, yeah, Winona Ryder. I would say those four, like, the four... the most important characters that we get throughout the series. Or not the series, but just really this season.
Absolutely. And I would like to highlight one other character who, you know, he is not, he doesn't have as much, as big a role as he would later have, but he, you know, breaks through as kind of one of the best characters of the series. And I'm referring to Joe Keery as Steve Harrington. And I have dubbed him the Jamie Lannister of this series.
Oh, God. You know what's funny?
Yes.
Is that I 100% agree with that statement. That's very on point, Zach, like that assessment. Because his trajectory is basically the same.
And so, like, he is, you know, when we first meet Steve Harrington, he is this pompous, rich, pretty boy who all he wants to do is just get in Nancy Wheeler's pants and have a good time and party with his cartoonishly dumb friends.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's not a bad person. He's not really a bully. He's just a guy who wants to have a good time.
Yeah.
And, like, when I put him against, like, other, like, high, like, how I think a normal high schooler is, I'm like, yeah, Steve Harrington's about what that is. He doesn't go out of his way to be an asshole, but, like, when confronted with, like, opposition, he can be a dick. And obviously, like, he pushes his whole, like, I want to bone down a little too hard.
Yeah.
But once he, you know, once we reach the point that, like, he gets into the fight with Jonathan, and he, his friends start turning on him, we kind of see this metamorphosis, happen, and we see him break free of this, like, kind of cliche party boy mentality into, like, this fully formed, responsible, upstanding citizen.
Yeah.
And it's such a great welcome change. So, and it kind of comes out of nowhere. He's like, you know, wants to help clean up the movie sign, the marquee. And then he shows up to the buyer's house, and I fucking love that scene because he's there just to make amends. And then when he sees Nancy's hand, and he's like genuinely concerned about her.
Yeah,
and I'm like, that's kind of sweet. And then of course he busts in. He sees like the spike bat and all the traps, and then Nancy pulls a gun on him, and I'm like, yeah, I'm with Steve. If I saw all this shit, I would be very concerned.
Yeah, I don't know that he... I feel like all his character motivations and everything are all pretty much in line with everything. There's only one big inconsistency with his character, Zach.
Which
is? That is his hair in the very first episode to the rest of the season. There's something off. It almost flanderizes itself in a period of one episode.
You're absolutely right. The hair does kind of take on a life of its own.
It became the most famous thing, you know, and just a very, I don't
that
know.
That and just, like, his status as, like, the babysitter.
Yeah.
But you know, and it's funny because in this season, he's not the babysitter. He is strictly in, like, the older kids club.
Yeah.
And it isn't until season two when he, like, starts hanging out with Dustin by necessity that he kind of takes on that more, like, older brother role. But yeah. Even here, like, the one of the final scenes is, like, you know, around Christmas, and we see Nancy give Jonathan the new camera as a Christmas present. And then you think it's from Nancy, but then she goes into the living room, and Steve's there, and she sits with him, and he's like, oh, did you give it to him? And she says, yeah. And I'm like, oh, that was from Steve. Oh, that's kind of adorable.
He has a heart of gold, you know? It's like, he just had some bad influences around him.
Absolutely.
And, like, he's at the age where it's like, and this is of no excuse to him. This is just, like, the way people were depicted then, and pretty much just, you know, ideas that these young men had at that time.
It's
just very representative of the time.
I can't blame a hormonal teenager for wanting to get his rocks off. It's just nature. I think there's a point when he comes across as a little too uncaring.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like the straw that breaks the camel's back for Nancy.
Yeah.
But, you know, when he breaks Jonathan's camera and confronts him about the photos, I don't see anything necessarily wrong with that scene coming from Steve Harrington. Like, in that moment, they're being confronted with, like, hey, this dude was in the woods taking pictures of us while we were, like, having a party. And, like, that's weird and intrusive and creepy. And it is weird and intrusive and creepy. And it's only redeemed by the fact that Jonathan accidentally...
You're going to go and break somebody's property, though? Like, are you going to go and, like, get the police involved?
Well, maybe, yeah. Maybe he goes about it the wrong way. But at the same time, I'm like, I don't blame him for getting upset. I would get upset if someone... If I found out someone had, like, pictures of me inside my house, I'd be like, the fuck is wrong with you? So I can't really fault him for that. And a lot of the stuff, when he goes into, like, you know, he sneaks into Nancy's room and he wants to, like, you know, again, get in her pants. And she's like, no, I'm here to study and you need to, like, you're distracting me and stuff. And eventually he's like, okay, fine. And he helps her study. And, you know, it's funny because he'll go on to kind of be the recurring joke with him is that, like, he can't get a girl.
Yeah.
And, but, like, it's almost like because he keeps not getting the girl, he keeps growing as a person. And it's kind of hilarious and makes him just consistently a great character across the board to the point that, like, there were points in season four I'm like, I swear to God, they're about to kill him.
You know, it's funny. I did feel very similar. I don't know if that is to Jamie's point, however, as much as it is to, like, okay, I think they're I don't know that they're going to give him the same treatment, right, that they gave the other. However, I can't say that I haven't enjoyed him as a character and kind of seeing his growth. And you really do get to see his growth upon, like, the second or third time watching.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the first time we all kind of got, you know, our classic kind of teenage boy writing, and then just now being able to look back at it, I'm just very happy with the direction and where he went.
It's great. He's a... Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
No. I mean, last thoughts on Steve.
Well, I was just going to say, like, just... He's a very, like, if you want to call him a bully, he's a very realistic and relatable bully. I was going to pivot to a quick... My one big complaint about the cast, and that's the bullies that they have in this show. And this is not something that's gotten much better in the later seasons, but anytime they feel like they have to include, like, a bog standard bully character, it's, like, cartoonish. So there's two sets of bullies in this first season. There's the young bullies and the older bullies. And the young bullies are just annoying. They're, like, their dialogue, for all the dialogue between Lucas and Mike and Dustin, it all feels really realistic. Like, they feel like real friends who are all pals, and it feels very authentic. But whenever the bullies show up, it just seems very forced. And I'm like, I realize that it's like they got to have some kind of tension in there, but they're just, like, cartoonishly bad. And of course, they go the route that so many movie/TV bullies go, which is to make them practically homicidal, which always takes me out of it. Like,
really?
So, like, the one pass I'll give is the movie It with, I forget the name of the bully in that, but, like, where he, like, is actually, like, mentally disturbed, and it's actually a result of the creature It kind of infecting the town of Derry. But here it's just like the kid got embarrassed because Eleven made him piss himself, so he was going to brutalize Dustin with a knife. And I'm like, come on, they're all 12 years old. No, he's not.
And then make the other one jump off a cliff. I did like the one point where, like, his buddy's like, this is not a good idea. Like, we should not be doing this. Like,
yeah, and I mean, like, that's maybe slightly redeeming of it, but it's just like, it just takes me out of it. Okay, and then we have the older, like Steve Harrington's friends, who are just so cartoonishly horrible.
I would say that they were definitely better than the children.
Maybe. Marginally.
But, like, in a way that, like, I think it's more believable, just because the kids were just like acting tough versus like these other people. I feel like they are probably more comfortable with kind of who they are and everything. Like they're overly sexual, they're overly like, macho, or like you
point,
know,
to a point where I'm like, who would be friends with these people?
But the thing is like, you're telling me you didn't know people like that back then? I definitely knew people like that, like, when I was in high school.
I guess I knew people like that, but it was never like... Like, when everyone else in the show is so, like, subtle and nuanced,
yeah.
And then you have these caricatures...
I think you have to be reminded, though, that, like, not everybody's gonna have the same amount of nuance as the next guy.
I guess, but it's just, like...
This makes you appreciate other characters more.
They're so vulgar and so rude.
Yeah.
And so obnoxious. And then you have Steve Harrington, who's, like, relatively level-headed. And I'm just like, why would Steve ever hang out with these people? So when he finally does, like, ditch them, you're like, yeah, why didn't he do this sooner? And I will say...
I don't think that they were given an opportunity earlier, because the thing is like, all that kind of came with them as, like, Nancy's character became more attached to their group, because Nancy represented something that was very opposite of their group. The thing is while they didn't have that in there, like that point of view,
yeah.
And innocence and things like that, like I'm sure probably it's not that it didn't come up, but I can imagine it's not just like in the forefront of the decision, you know, like the morality meter, you know, like,
yeah. And then, I mean, like, again, like
they were in constant debate with it.
Steve has a really good line where he's like, oh, you guys hate Nancy because she's not as miserable as you guys.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's okay. So like,
that's a good line.
I get that they're, yeah, it's one of two lines in the show where someone, you know, someone tells someone their exact character flaw. The other is when Nancy and Jonathan are in the woods and they're talking about, like, Nancy wanting to, like, not grow up like her parents. And he's like, yeah, but you are saying you don't want to do it, but then you're just going to go with the safe choice of Steve Harrington, and then you're going to end up moving to a cul-de-sac because it's easy and it's safe and blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, oh, wow, he told her exactly what her script-given character flaw is. That's neat.
How does that make you feel?
Just, I don't know. It just takes me out a little bit where I'm just like, eh. I mean, he's not wrong, but I mean...
Now, given the fact that you said this could have been the idea of, like, the anthology,
yeah,
like, this
so,
would have been
like I
it.
Said, there's, it's not necessarily, like, none of these things killed the show for me, but, like, I can understand if I was like, and we'll never see them again, I'm like, cool. If season two had been, like, not a high school drama half the time, then... That one time it was, I'd be like, yeah, we were doing a high school thing, of course. But then, like, now that, like, we went ahead, even in season four, they have, like, these, like, California bullies who fuck with Eleven, and they're so over the top. They're so just, like, unbelievably just, like, shitty. And I'm like, who would be friends with these people?
Yeah, there's one person that could definitely use, like, a nice punch in the face.
Oh, I thought you were going to say a roller skate to the face.
Roller skate, I mean, that is if I was being really on the nose, which I should have been.
Like that roller skate.
Like that roller skate. God, that was the most deserved thing ever.
I loved it. I was like, this bitch is going to have the worst thing coming to her.
But needless to say, I think... Characters like that exist for a reason, and it's because people like that existed. You know,
I know, but
they didn't come from nothing.
But that's like being like, oh, Charles Manson existed, so we need to put a Charles Manson crazy figure in the show. No, I just, listen, I'm okay with there being bullies. They can even be like kind of like colorful bullies.
I was going to say, like, I think for the setting, like, I think...
It's fine.
Yeah.
Did it kill the show for me? No. There's a few moments that definitely broke my immersion a bit, and that's just in some of the CGI that hasn't held up.
That's what I
so
that was my biggest thing from the watching the show, is that I realized, I think back when we first watched it, it's not something I really paid attention to. I think I was fine with it, but now you put it very well. Technology has gotten great. We have 4K televisions.
Yeah, I don't know what your setup is. I was rewatching this season on a 50-inch 4K.
I got HDR, 4K, Dolby sound. I got the whole nine yards. You know what I'm saying?
So
going back and watching some of the stuff, I'm like, some of those renders and lighting and textures seemed a little off.
Like the scene when Mike jumps off the cliff and then Eleven catches him and he's floating there. I'm like, no, he's not.
Yeah, that was interesting.
And then he gets like thrown back over and he lands, and for some reason everyone turning to look at him is composited into the shot.
Yeah.
It's very strange. Obviously, the big one of, like, Eleven flipping the truck.
That one, I don't know. That one still looks fine to me.
It was so-so. I think it didn't look as bad as Mike floating through the air. But, like, it's weird because that's still a problem they have. And it might just be my HDTV kind of making those scenes stand out a bit more.
For me, it's definitely a little more related to, like, the upside down stuff. Not even like the upside down, but like some of the gate CG seemed a little off. And then also some of the Demogorgon bits. While some were good, others, like the ones where he was in shadow and everything, they look great because, I mean, you didn't really need much light to see. It was just like he only had whatever available light was on there. Like anything.
Hey, make sure you don't misgender the Demogorgon.
Excuse me. But then I think really like one of the final scenes where the Demogorgon's in the school in that very bright setting and seeing like this kind of golem looking creature, you know, walk around through this room and open the door and everything. And it's like, a little off. I'm like,
maybe
it didn't look too good to me.
We've been spoiled because we got that really great fight scene in season 4. That's just insane looking.
That is the thing. I will say, It's interesting coming back to the show after I hadn't watched this season since maybe the first, or when the second season came out, I rewatched the first season again. But I hadn't really rewatched it since. It's nice that it put a lot more things into context. I will say I have a newfound appreciation for other ideas that they use in the show.
Yes.
Moving on kind of past the CG, but I did not realize how much kind of research that the Duffer brothers seem to have taken and put it into this, and almost creative, like, I don't want to call it like a revisionist history of sense, but they really are like, they put a really nice touch on the, like, the psycho, I don't want to call it psycho, it's like the telekinetic and the psychokinetic kind of aspect and history of the show. I was doing research on, let's say, the history of psychonesis from Wikipedia, and almost like word for word, the way that they would talk about the research that was being done in like the 70s and like the 80s, and then this later kind of tie into the whole MK Ultra kind of aspect of the show that we were given. It all really ties in super well with basically the story of the show about like the Hawkins lab, and then they would like take these children, but like claims were like never publicized. No evidence was actually found.
Right.
And that, and like, you know, just all very, very interesting things that I thought that their story was a little more original. Not that it actually was, but I was like, oh wow, like they're really like playing with just this piece. I don't want to call it like, it's not that it's not known history, but it's very niche kind of information.
It's pretty cool. And like, obviously they tie it into like the setting of like the Cold War, like the kids were the result of government testing on their parents.
Yeah.
And then they were utilizing the kids to spy on the Russians. And we see that like with Eleven with her tests, where she's like, they put her in the sensory deprivation tank, and she goes to like listen in on like Russians plotting things. And it's interesting that was an element that we saw broadened very much in the later seasons, the involvement of the Russians
Can I read to you an excerpt from the Wikipedia page of Psychonesis?
Yes.
It's about like a sentence or two. It says, in 1984, the United States National Academy of Sciences, at the request of the U.S. Army Research Institute, formed a scientific panel to assess the best evidence of psychonesis. Part of its purpose was to investigate military application of psychonesis, for example, to remotely jam or disrupt enemy weaponry. The panel heard from a variety of military staff who believed in PK and made its visits to the Pierre Laboratory, and two other laboratories that had claimed to positive results from micro PK experiments. PK is psychokinesis.
Yes, yes.
And that they said that in 1987, their conclusion was that there was no scientific evidence of the existence of psychokinesis. And I'm like, it was just really interesting to think, like, huh, this is.
It's definitely
way more interested in the show now that I've found that it's kind of not sort of based on real life, but like they took an existing piece of our nation's mm-hmm. research and implemented it in their show.
Listen,
and I'm like, less original, but I really like your adaptive literate. What do you call it? Your just their adaptation technique.
Yeah, it's
creative liberties.
Sure, and you know that it's always cool when they can do that and kind of draw on things that actually have a basis in reality. And you know, I'm a firm believer, and I know how the world works. But you ever like you see stuff and some things in the news, and then you go like, they play it off as, oh, it was this or it was that, but then you go like, I bet there's a deeper story there. A long time ago, I remember when I was in high school.
Jeffrey Epstein didn't kill himself.
That's true, that he didn't. But when I was in high school, I think there was this whole thing about this guy in Florida who was like, he attacked somebody and like tried to eat their face, and like they said,
oh, because of the bath salts.
Well, they said he was on bath salts, but I was like, what if that was like. What if there was some like supernatural shit and the bath salt thing was just a cover up? And you know, things like that where you go like, you hear these random stories of things that happen and you always just believe what you're told by the news, but you never know if there isn't like some G-man there who's covering the whole deeper secret up, the stranger thing. And
listen, everybody has an FBI agent.
This isn't about to become like the Joe Rogan podcast where we talk about conspiracies, but
no, I hate that actually.
Yeah, but it's always fun to kind of like let your mind explore those things a bit. I wanted to, so kind of going into like a bit more of like the fun stuff. There's a lot of nostalgia in this series. One of the things I love is the. So obviously it's set in the 80s, and they're comparing today's world to the 80s. One of the biggest things that they've kind of one of the big differences obviously is communication.
Yeah.
We are capable at any moment to contact each other at a moment's notice with our cellular phones, and they had a nice workaround that with this with the whole series, really, not just this season, with the walkie-talkies.
Oh, that yeah, that was super clever.
They just function like cell phones. Well, they'll be like, hey, where are you? And they'll be like, oh, I'm at a, you know, Merkwood or whatever. And
what
it's
was
just like,
fun about it, it's like they were always like, what are you doing on this channel? Like,
right.
And like that was the biggest thing, or like because Mike and Lucas live so closely, like Mike could really only talk to Lucas.
Like, yeah, unless they like pull the antenna out all the way or something. But like,
yeah. Also, Dustin had like his headset attachment. Yeah, he was a very smart kid.
He's the tech kid. I like that. They all have like their things that are like make them unique. Like Dustin is like the more scientifically minded one. Will's more of an artist. Mike's kind of just like the every kid. And then Lucas has like all of his dad's like stuff from Vietnam.
Dude, that was pretty interesting when he kind of brought all
the
that.
The knife and binoculars from Nam.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, fun references. We get some references to Tolkien. They obviously there's the woods behind Will's house they call Mirkwood, and the password to Castle Byers is Radagast.
Yeah.
There's and again later this is something that really carries on deeper into the series when we get to season four. There's a wonderful line by the new character Eddie where he talks about like you're asking me to walk into Mordor. And I'm like, ah, I love it. I love it. It's so great. It's not in your face.
One of my favorite bits of information is when, like, Will and Dustin in the first episode are on, like, their way home and decide to, like, race each other.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, one of the best things is that they were racing to, or Will said that if he won, he would get Dustin's issue of X-Men number 134.
Which now, is?
Obviously, there was some Googling. I did not know this off the top of my head. But the Uncanny X-Men issue number 34 was entitled Heroes and Hellfire. The Hellfire Club has transformed Phoenix into their Black Queen. Are the X-Men too late to save her or themselves? The Hellfire Club, buddy.
Yeah,
and
of course,
I didn't realize this that they were such an X-Men thing. X-Men First Class, like they did not name drop that in the film. I don't read many of the and First Class.
Yes, I do.
They did name drop Hellfire Club?
Yes.
Oh, then I need to fucking rewatch that. I didn't. You know what's funny? I have a lot of X-Men comics. Haven't read many of them.
That's okay. And but yeah, it's great. It's a great thing. And obviously, season four, we get like the Stranger Things Hellfire Club, the group that they play D&D with. So that's fun. We get a lot of nice mentions to. You know, different superheroes to Star Wars, especially because Elle has basically the Force.
Yeah.
But we see, we get mentions of other movies. You know, they talk about The Thing, they talk about Risky Business.
I would also say, like, you know, you get your Millennium Falcon toy.
You do get the big Millennium Falcon toy. Is there a point when nostalgia becomes too much? I would say in this season, not so much. There's stuff later seasons where I'm like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, stop. There's a thing in season three where Lucas is obsessed with New Coke. And oh. I'm like, listen, as a person who's had the privilege of trying New Coke, I can say for complete certainty, it is an inferior product. So I don't care if they thought it was funny. It's distracting that there's just this one kid who likes New Coke and like feels the need to kind of like give like an ad read for it.
What was New Coke? What was the new formula?
It was, I don't know what the specific, it just tasted like, whenever I tasted it, it tasted like Pepsi. And I'm just like, Well, that's why I specifically drink Coke, so I don't have to drink Pepsi.
What about Coke 2?
I don't know what that is.
1985, New Coke was sold only in the U.S. In other cities, it was marketed as Coke 2.
Okay, well, New Coke, all I know is I have a can of it. I got it back when Stranger Things Season 3 came out. They did a promotional thing where it was like, they put New Coke out again, and you could order some cans of it. So I did, and I tried it, and it sucked. So I totally get why they stopped making it, and that's why now if you buy a Coke, it says Classic Coke.
Oh.
So, but whatever. It's good. I'm going to go buy a Coke now. but at least in this first season, the nostalgia is not so in your face. And it feels, you know, again, like later seasons, they have the kids dressing up in like movie accurate Ghostbuster costumes. And I want to be like, no one back in the day had like costumes that realistic.
I mean, unless you had a really cool mom that like made your costumes for you.
I did have a really cool mom who made my costumes for me, and they still were not movie accurate.
You know, moms take liberties.
Well, whatever.
What can we say?
Let's talk real quick about the impact of this show from this first season, because I think it's safe to say Stranger Things was an overnight sensation.
Yeah, I would, like I said, there was maybe like a 2-week period that I hadn't watched it, But by the end of those 2 weeks, like when I finally, you know, decided, oh, let's give this a shot. Holy crap. did everybody love the show? I remember that Halloween that year. I want to say everybody dressed up as Eleven, my girlfriend at the time included. I was Mike.
Oh, wow. Nice.
I had to be. She was 11. I was like, all right, I guess I have to be Mike.
What'd you do? And dress up in like normal clothing?
Exactly, dude. I went to the thrift store. I got a $10 jacket.
It's my Mike Wheeler costume.
Yeah, basically. But I mean, like, that was the thing, dude. Like, they merchandised so well that year.
Out the ass.
Yeah.
I mean, listen, and the advertising was there. Eleven, she doesn't like normal waffles. She doesn't like Publix brand waffles. She doesn't like Piggly Wiggly, off the counter, no name brand. She likes Eggos.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, I bet the executives at General Mills were just like, yes, yes, make people want Eggos.
I do want to think about this. We were talking about like Netflix subscriber growth earlier.
Right.
And I'm kind of looking into the year 2016 from like 2015.
So 2016.
There was about almost a 20 million increase from the year before. And I agree, that's a whole year, not like 6 months. But right. Then looking into 2017, it's another like 20.5 million increase, which I would still say is rather substantial. Was it based solely on the success of Stranger Things? Not, I wouldn't say necessarily, but I would say it was a lot, one of their like largest kind of growths from the years before, because 2014, they had only just 8 million subscriber additions. 2015, it was 16 million. And so the fact that it went from, you know, about 18 million to a 21 million jump in that year since the release, you know, I would say the content was probably somewhat related to that.
Oh, I don't doubt it. I mean, it was such a big hit. There was tie-in books, tie-in comics, video games. There was a DLC for Dead by Daylight, which is an amazing game, and where they added a killer was the Demogorgon, and they added Nancy and Steve Harrington to it. And you couldn't go anywhere without seeing something from Stranger Things.
I mean, that year it was nominated for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 Emmys. And it won 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of... No, just 5 of those.
Hey, that's still substantial.
Like, in almost every category. Like, drama series, supporting actor, supporting actress, directing, writing, guest actress, production design, casting, cinematography, editing, like makeup and hairstyling, sound, music, title design. Dude, the title of that show was like incredible.
What's the font they used? The ITC Bengat, or I don't know how to pronounce it, but it's they specifically wanted to draw on like the look of like old Stephen King books and old horror and sci-fi books of the 80s. I love the way that they do the title sequences. Every episode is a chapter.
It's just nice.
Yeah, it's really awesome. It's really fun. Keeps things really interesting.
I would say like for like television programming today, like, it's very iconic. It's kind of original in the sense that, like, right now I don't think we have anything else on television like it, that with the same amount of like success.
Yeah.
You know, and that's both like in the quality of writing and also the quality of performers.
Absolutely. And it's funny because it never feels that like, you know, they're going to end it on season 5. And
I remember when it was announced, it said it had like a 5-season thing. I was like, how are they going to turn this into 5 seasons?
Yeah. But it never felt like they were just tacking things on just to extend the length. It's like every season that's come out has felt like a natural extension of what's come before.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just great. I want to talk about this one last thing. really cool thing that was going on around the time after in the hype of the first season is that there was a lot of unofficial stuff. One of which was a pop-up bar in Chicago called the Upside Down, which if you go on their Wikipedia page under the heading of controversies, they talk about this bar. I did not know this was anything newsworthy, but I remember when I helped my sister move to Chicago, she said, oh, there's this Stranger Things pop-up bar that just opened up. You want to go to it? And I said, oh, cool. So we went, and it was a really cool place. They had the whole place was decorated to look like the Upside Down. They had furniture on the ceiling, and they had areas that are supposed to look like different parts of Hawkins, Benny's Burgers, or Hawkins Lab. They had a big wall with a couch and the Christmas lights with the alphabet that you could take a picture in front of. And I think if you go back on my profile pictures on my social media, one of my older profile pictures is me on the couch.
I do remember that.
You can holding the bundle of Christmas lights. It's a miracle no one got electrocuted. But they had specialty drinks. I remember there was one called like Eleven's Eggos, and there was a one that was like kind of like a slushy drink called the Demogorgon, which I had. It was pretty awesome. It was a really cool, totally not legal thing that happened. I didn't realize until researching for this episode that not only was it in the news at all, but that Netflix had issued them a cease and desist letter that said, hey, close that down. But apparently the cease and desist letter was very tongue-in-cheek, very like full of like jokes about the series. And
while we're not going to go full Demogorgon on you, just don't stay open past your like opening window.
The, you know, there's something like that, yeah. Or not to be a Dr. Brenner about it, but like yeah. Blah blah blah. And I'm like, that's cool. And they did close down, but it's like at least Netflix wasn't like, we'll sue the shit out of you, motherfucker.
Listen, all we have to do is wait 96 years, and then the characters of Stranger Things go into the public domain.
Ooh, and then it's going to be Hopper and Murray's Wild Adventure.
That would be hilarious. Or, like, maybe you would have a version of Stranger Things where Eleven hunts and kills everybody.
Eleven is a big game hunter in Africa, and she's hunting the most dangerous game, Steve Harrington.
That would be great. I would say, all in all, like, this series, it was good. The rise to power, I followed it near and dear. But then, as we kind of verged into, let's say, the last season, they almost lost me, but I'm happy to say that they brought me back, and I'm happy to talk about the show again.
Season 4 has been fun. It's
it's by been far pretty intense. I don't want to say my favorite, but by far the most interesting to me.
Yeah, it's always really fun, kind of getting back with these characters and seeing like where the story kind of takes them and splits them up and stuff. And I'm really excited going into the final two episodes that we're getting July 1st.
Yeah, me too. It is something to look forward to.
It's going
to
be basically like 3.5, almost 4 hours of content. So, you know, that's pretty exciting.
I'm very happy with it. I don't know about you, but after I finished watching the season, I actually was just rolled right into season 2. And so I'm currently... That is what I'm watching right now. So I'm almost like more than halfway through season 2 of Stranger Things. I'm hoping by the time I finish season 2, I'll get roll right into 3, rewatch the first seven episodes of 4, and then July 1st will come around and be like, boom. Oh, okay,
here we are. That's cool. The next Netflix thing I'm doing is I'm catching up with, because I never finished watching it, Castlevania, because they just announced a new series for Castlevania is about to start.
Ooh. Or we'll be starting a new series soon. Or a new season?
New series, both.
Oh,
set after the first series, but
okay.
Instead of,
I suppose the characters of the franchise would allow that to happen.
Yeah,
kind of in that sense.
Yeah, whatever. It's I'm excited for it. The animation school and it's got a pretty good voice cast, so.
Well, would you look at that? Needless to say, Zach, I think our journey to the Upside Down is still still going.
I am now going to roll my 1d20 to see if you survived this campaign.
Oh, God. What do I need to win?
A nat 20.
A nat 20? What the hell is a nat 20?
A natural 20. You know, you don't know your D&D terms. You rolled a 3, dog. You're dead. Demogorgon got you. Put slug in your mouth.
You have to say goodbye to the episode now.
It's a show of one. We thank you all, lovely listeners, for joining us on this nostalgic synth pop adventure. And come back and visit us again. Tell us, comment on our videos, on our posts. What we don't have videos yet on our posts on any of our platforms. What you want to hear us talk about? If you think about anything we've said that you want to tell us where we're wrong, or tell us how right we are, comment away. That's what we live for. Chris, you can come back alive now if you want to say anything else before we wave our lovely listeners goodbye.
Thanks, lovely listeners, Scriptor Screenies. Scriptor Screeners, if you will. We have been your hosts. Follow us at Scriptor Screen, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, YouTube. Go to our website, www.scriptorscreen.com or anchor.fm/scriptorscreen. Do the stuff. Subscribe. Share us with all your friends and family. And we hope you enjoy the final episodes of Season 4, Stranger Things, and rewatch Season 1. It's definitely worth it. In the meantime.
And we'll see you in Season 5.
Goodbye.